there. I'm Paddy Maloney, founder of the Irish band The Chieftains. We're going to be in the Town Hall, New York on the 12th. And I'm speaking with Rabbi Saul Solomon on UNC Radio. The program, of course, is Days Gone By.
Oh, shalom, my friends. This is your old pal, Rabbi Saul Solomon, here on the Dave's Gone By radio program. But today, don't call me Rabbi Saul Solomon. Call me Rabbi Saul O. Solomon, or perhaps Oy Solomon, because it is St. Patrick's Day coming up very, very soon. And to celebrate that, who doesn't love Irish music, the Clancy Brothers and Van Morrison, and especially a band that started back in 1962 and is still going today, the Chieftains. Not only that, the founder of that group is still performing, still playing with them. His name is Paddy Maloney, and he is on the phone with us all the way from the Emerald Isle. Shalom, Paddy Maloney, and welcome to the neighborhood.
Shalom, I just couldn't talk to Rabbi Solomon. O Solomon.
Today it's O Solomon. Tell me, do you know any Yiddish words at all?
I'm hopeless, goodness. And I always meant to, but I never really did get into it. Now, my two languages, it's Irish, the Gaelic Irish, and English, of course, you know. You know, I travel the world, and, you know, to Brittany, to France, to Spain, just been to China.
Oh.
Band to play on the Great Wall of China, 1983. I don't have any Chinese except Gambe, which means bottoms up.
Oh, you would know that one. Okay. Well, how would you say bottoms up in Gaelic, in Irish language?
Well, we usually say slainte. It's going to be built on Tamsha Harish. It's now riding a border of wooing and Kasmashinda. The roads will rise in front of you, it means, you know. It's the old language that goes back. It's a beautiful language, of course, and it's the Yiddish. But I never got to grips with other languages except my own, I'm afraid.
Well, wait, let me ask you, what would be the Irish equivalent, or the Gaelic equivalent of Oy Vey?
Oy Vey.
Like, oh, no, oh, God, oy, no, Oy Vey. What would be, how would you say that in Gaelic? Okay. All right, I'm already lost. We're talking with Paddy Maloney of the Chieftains. They are going to be at Town Hall Saturday, March 12th. I believe that is today. So, have to ask, you started, of all things, as an accountant for several years.
I bluffed me away, but I didn't. I did accountancy work during the day, all right, and I went to study at night because things weren't great. I had to have a job, a day job, you know, to bring in the few bob. So I went at night, and I went halfway, let's put it that way, but the music sort of took over, you know, especially come Christmas time, and all the parties would start, and then I wouldn't go back, you know, until the following September. But that was the kind of profession I was going towards, and thank God I failed.
But what shocked me a little bit is that one of the other founding members of the Chieftains, he left the band to go into, what, civil engineering? He actually was making music, you guys were successful, and then he decided to build buildings or something, right?
Correct, that's Michael Tubridy, who is one of the founder members that's still with us. And Michael is a civil engineer. In fact, if you come into Dublin town, the new airport that was built there, that was his project. But Michael used to come on tour, and when he'd get back off the tour, he'd go straight to the office and start picking up where he left off, you know. So he never really gave up the engineering until he retired in 79.
But it sounds like he did both of them for love, whereas you probably did not love accounting very much.
I didn't, but it stood to me later because I was able to, you know, when I took over the whole running of the band and building up the group from, you know, 53 years now, I started, you know what I mean, this all stood to me. And, you know, accounts, contracts, that kind of work, even to this day, I still do the books for the band myself, you know.
Really?
For the yearly audit and things. But that's the sort of thing that did stand to me from a commercial point of view, having had, you know, the experience of working at it during the day. in a big builders providers, you know. There was 600 people worked there, and I used to do the wages as well as everything else.
Wow.
Keep the money flowing, if you know what I mean.
I wonder, did any of it flow into your pockets, or were you honest?
No. But they eventually made me manager, you know, one of the management team with a big pension. But I saw fit, though, in 1968 to give it all up. Chieftains are still going strong. And in 68, I took over the running of a record company called Clara Records, which was, in fact, where we recorded the mother company in those days. And I think I produced over 40 albums during the 8 years as managing director. But all the time, you know, keeping an eye on the Chieftains, waiting for the time to pop, pull up the stakes, and got the lads going, and got sabbaticals for some of them from their jobs, you know, just to see would it work, because it is true trad music, traditional Irish music. You know, when you start appearing on Saturday Night Live in 1978, I think it was, and being asked to play for Peter O'Toole and Peter Sellers, and I could go on name dropping for a long time.
Oh, please do.
So you had something special there, you know. And it was great in a documentary that was made on me there 2 months ago. They showed the first concert from the Albert Hall in London, which 1975. That's when we decided to go full-time professional.
Wow, so it took about 13, 14 years before you
guys... Yes, to go the full-time. Just building up, like the Clancy Brothers and Tommy Makem did a great job in the 50s for the songs. And I had a great belief that, you know, this great folk art that we had, this great traditional music, you know, it had a listening audience out there throughout the world. It took a while, but we made it, and it's still going strong. You know, they're into... They want me to do 17 now, 2017.
My God.
Already booking us in America. So we can't complain, you know, but we try to ease back a bit, you know, and not to push too hard. I'm getting a bit long in the tooth now, as they say, you know.
Well, here is a question. Actually, I've got 10 different questions just from what you were saying, but we'll start with, do you... you are so identified with the Chieftains because you founded the group. Is there a Chieftains after you, beyond you, or when you stop, it stops?
I don't know. No, we didn't. As each member of the originals, like six, all in six, it's only myself is the still member, active.
Right.
Member. And so the group, the people I have with me have these young dancers, harp players, singers, they're just absolutely brilliant. And it kind of would be very disappointed, I would, if something didn't continue, if you know what I mean. Because it's there, the legacy's there, the whole documentary, the style of what we do and what I do and what I brought to the band. It's still very much very... I'm passing it on, in other words, and you'll see that on the concerts that we do. You know, I give opportunity to other musicians to play, like Trina Marshall on the harp and John Polatsky playing some incredible fiddle music, and Tim Eady and Aileth McCormack, who incidentally she's from the island of Lewis, a wonderful singer, and just off the west coast of Scotland, and she sings and plays. And then we have Tara Breen, and Tara is the youngest sort of recruit, you might say, who drifted into the band and hasn't left for the last 4 years. And she's a great fiddle player, dancer, and she even has a saxophone she brings and does a little turn on it at the end of the show. And she blew me away at playing Irish music on this instrument. It's just astonishing. So I haven't stopped, you know, and it's all the time continuing and encouraging young musicians and people, and even you've heard of the Von Trapps, I'm sure.
Yes.
They Sound of Music. They came to Ireland 2 years ago and asked me to put together some arrangements of songs. So these are the grandchildren now, and they remember listening to our music. I usually say, is that what happened to you as children? You know, their parents used to play Chieftain albums, and so there's a great story. It goes on forever.
But the question also was that, I mean, you're still, thank God, alive and well and performing, but I'm thinking 20, 30 years down the line.
Oh, I would hope so. I mean, we haven't been able to track back you know, was there 200 or 300 years ago, was there the likes of chieftains? But there were great musicians then, harp players, fiddle players and flute players. And they did get together and play music, but maybe not the same as what I created with the band. I wanted to get the goodness, the soul, the colour of the music across to an audience who had never heard it before. And, you know, we had Henry Mancini at our first big concert in 1974 in New York. I was very surprised, you know, and there he was. So the people that have followed us, and I'm going back to your question, you know, is it 30 years from now? Perhaps, you know, it's hard to know. But at the moment, the young people, from 20, like my grandson, for instance, he's 20 years of age, and he just took to the tin whistle about 4 years ago. I mean, he was brilliant. He did a concert with me in Barcelona there on New Year's Eve.
Wow.
With the King of Spain. The King of Spain was present. So the young people are picking up on it and continuing. And perhaps, you know, I've just finished a score for my grandson, who's now 4 years of age.
Yeah.
Boston. And his name is Fionn. And it's a symphony, you know, with a symphony orchestra, dance and song and everything going on in it. I presented it to him. I'm going to give him that for, you know, as a going away present, you know, I'd say. But he has it now. We were performing that with the next symphony concerts that we do in Pittsburgh.
Well, can I ask you, do you miss, speaking of young people and giving a chance for other people's music to come out there, do you miss running Claddagh Records and being able to put new bands out and or new traditional bands out? Or you had 7 years and you're done and you don't miss it at all?
I would miss, you know, the requests that I get, you know, not every day, but so many. And the last group I brought out were young girls in their 20s called Leiden, and gave them the opportunity of playing with us on tour for 6 weeks for their pennons, I usually say. And they were just fabulous. And as a result of being with us on that, they got a record deal and a publishing deal. So it's still very much there in front of, you know, things to do for young people. And you'll experience that at the concert, incidentally, when you hear the likes of Tara Breen, you know, who is back in Ludwig County, Clare, she lives, and, you know, she's just astonishing. I need this. Everybody like her needs that chance to, the same as what I built up myself. I didn't get very many chances. I had to work hard at it for many years, but people believed in me, and they loved my style of piping and tin whistle playing and that, and it led to everything, you know, winning 6 Grammys, as you know, and 22 nominations and an Oscar to boot for Barry Lyndon.
Right. Can I ask you what it was like working with Stanley Kubrick? Was he in the editing room? Were you in the editing room with him? Did he have a certain personality? Any strange, quirky requests?
Oh, totally. You were
What?
Put your finger on it as if you were there. But I loved both of us a bit around the band, to be honest, I think, you know. But when I get this phone call, you know, Petty, you know, I want some music for Barry Lyndon. I didn't know who he was. You know, I hadn't seen his films or that, you know. And I was running the record company and had a publicity thing going on. And I said, well, listen, Mr. Kubrick, can you call me back on Monday? Because I'm in the middle of a press conference here. And then somebody was there. They said, do you realize who you were talking to? So I did get the call, went to see him in London. And it was very funny. You know, he only wanted 4 or 5 minutes of music, which I played this air, you know, the love theme from Barry Lyndon. And And then said, you know, I have a couple of other things here, and he showed me, and I might play something. He said, oh, God's sake, no, you couldn't use that for us. Some guy sort of stopping into his Pint of Guinness or something on a Saturday night. We had remarks like that, but the kindness and niceness and of the man, you know, he wanted us back, the whole band, which we couldn't come because we were just becoming full-time professional in 75, and he just brought over all the family and had a big Halloween party and fireworks and everything, you know. So that was Stanley for me. It always allowed me to use clips of the film when I wanted to, you know, free of charge.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear that he was such a good, decent person. Who are other people that you've either worked with or musically collaborated with that you have very happy, nice memories and anecdotes and stories of?
Yeah, well, my goodness, you probably saw the list, but I mean,
wow.
It does go on.
No, but specifically, really, really happiest.
The great moment was with the Rolling Stones. When they were in Dublin, I got them to do the song The Rocky Road to Dublin. And I took Satisfaction, you know, Satisfaction, there, one of their songs, and I put the riff into the middle of the Rocky Road to Dublin, and Keith came to me, you know, pulling up, where'd you get that idea from, you know, and, how'd you get this? So, but we had a great party. I remember, you know, 1 o'clock, I hadn't anything on tape, and I said, lads, do you mind if I press the button? And so they all just got into us, and it was just flowed beautifully, and I knew they weren't going to stop. So I had to do the old trick, the mechanical sort of fade out, you know, but so, well, who cares, you know,
right.
The wood was flying and Mick Jagger was there and everything, and just great, just great. But that was a great moment, and Sting, working with Sting was terrific. And, you know, you mentioned Van Morrison, and we've since...
That is one of the best albums that you ever did.
You know, we've had Van.
Yeah.
And we made Irish Heartbeat, of course, together, a whole collaboration album. So the memories of that were good and bad.
Well, I've interviewed some other people about Van Morrison, journalists who've tried to interview him, musicians who've worked with him. And again, the stories are good and the stories are bad. So you had a mix of both.
Well, Van rang tomorrow morning and said, look, I have a song, will you come in? You know, I'd be there. And, and since we made that album, you know, he's been on Shenandoah, The Long Journey Home, which we play some of that music for you in concert. We still have that because we've a lovely choir who are going to give us a hand with it too. But, you know, Van was great, and he came, I remember, come to San Francisco, and he goes, I believe you're in town, you know. And we were in one of the wineries outside of San Francisco, and he came, and I thought he was going to do one or two songs, but he did about 8 songs altogether for the evening, you know. I mean, the crowd didn't know he was coming, you know, so you could imagine the joy. But they're wonderful moments that I can still... envisage, you know, I can still see the lights of the city and just that beautiful moment and playing with Van, you know, it's terrific.
As a musician, certainly, and the Irish Heartbeat album I recommend to anybody, whether you're a real Celtic aficionado or just a casual music fan or Van Morrison fan, it's an absolutely marvelous record,
yeah.
In my opinion.
It's great, and it was all recorded in 1 week, and I produced it and did the arrangements, and I remember he rang me up one time, because we only had 1 rehearsal, and I said, God, Van, you have to have more than 1 rehearsal, you know. He said, great shapes, Paddy, great shapes. Shapes is what he was, you know, talking about, arrangements and that. But it was great fun, and we had a whole year of touring afterwards.
Oh, wow. I did not remember. Who is someone that you wish you had collaborated with over the years? Someone who's no longer with us, perhaps, that you think, oh, they would have been great to do an album with or a couple of songs with?
Let me think. I know we did one song with Pavarotti, who I have great admiration for. He's passed on. But, Bob Dylan was somebody who I approached because we did a festival in Japan at Nara, you know, the Buddhist monastery there in Japan. And it had everybody, and Joni Mitchell, everyone was on that concert. And including ourselves and Bob Dylan, you know, so there was a big jam session at the end, and I know he did say, you know, maybe, you know, I could do a song. I wanted him on The Long Journey Home, and but it was all going well for a while. Then all of a sudden, he became, everything started to change for him, and he just took off again, you know. And I couldn't wait. I had to let the album out without him. So maybe someday, you know.
Maybe. Oh, okay. Because there's a picture of you with him, I think, on some website. So that
that's right. Yes, yeah. We've there's so many photographs and things out there. Every day, like, for instance, 2 weeks ago, we played, you know, we're commemorating the 1916 rebellion.
Right.
You know, 100 years. 1916 it took place, and so this year is called Misha Era, which is I Am Ireland, and I'm including new pieces of music to commemorate them. It's just the turning point in Irish history, in other words.
What was it, guys? Mission Era, you said?
We played in Glasgow 2 weeks ago with Symphony, and Chris Christofferson came and sang three of his great songs.
Wow.
It's still happening even to this day, you know, that we do get together with great musicians, and we had a little few drams of Scotch whiskey afterwards with him, and I remember him saying to me, maybe we should do a tour.
All right, hey, or do the Mission Era position or something like that. But
exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Can I ask you, having been in music and touring and then that lifestyle, and being Irish, was alcohol ever an issue, a problem with you or members of the band? Because it's kind of like the Irish curse thing.
No, we sort of had a golden, we didn't have a golden rule. We had a general understanding, unsaid, that nobody sort of went on the jar before a concert, or, you know, we don't bother. We have a few bottles of Guinness and that sort of thing ready for guests after the show, but it doesn't work, you know, especially in our kind of music. And it's great to go to a party afterwards and have a session, as we often had and often do. And with the likes of Van, for instance, it comes back to memory. In Holland, we had one of the great nights that went on all night after a show, you know. And that's when you might just relax and have a glass of red wine or whatever, you know.
But you didn't, nothing ever got out of control or something that you guys couldn't handle?
Oh, even to this day, you know, like our government still consider us their music ambassadors, and Culture Ireland is a group that are doing some wonderful work all over the world. But the first concert, as I say, was in Glasgow, and they were involved in that, you know, and being musical ambassadors, you've got to act like that, you know. But it's still great, you know, that we can still have fun afterwards. And all those youngsters in the band that I've got, I should call them youngsters, they're from 20 to 40, you know. But they love to party afterwards.
Oh.
And so they just take off. But I'm too old for that now, you know. I just couldn't stick that. There was a time. I get them at it, you know.
Now, speaking of older times, when you started doing collaborations and things like that, did you take any guff from Irish music purists that suddenly you stopped just doing the harp and the tin whistle and the Ulillian pipes, and now you were collaborating with pop stars and things? Did people get mad about that?
They did, and they got mad about everything, that even what I was doing myself, you know, in putting together our unique sound and arrangements, you know, bringing out colour and tunes that, you know, I had done a lot of ones there, you know, a lot of medals for all Ireland competitions. But if you might sit down with a bunch of musicians and play, and still do to this day, but what I used to call it trash the Beatles. You know, it was great for you and them, but not for a listening audience who would be just charmed to hear the inner beauty of tunes and music and that, you know. So the older people, you know, when I was 12 and 13, I was even doing little harmony things with tin whistles and stuff. They said, "Oh, you put that out now, stop it. You know, you don't want to be that. And when they heard I had a skiffle band,
oh, yeah.
I started a skiffle group for a year, I think it was. And I introduced the tin whistle into it, like Lonnie Donegan, putting on the egg and knee, putting on the style. All those great songs, you know. And Lonnie Donegan.
Does your chewing gum lose its flavor on the bedpost overnight?
That's it.
Yeah, yeah, Rock Island Line, yeah.
The lady, dress up with a beard and a white hat, you know. But it was really for fun, you know. Never for 1 minute was I ignoring, you know, what I did best, traditional Irish music, you know. That always took first place with me, you know.
And, speaking...
But good, great times, though, and music has continued, you know. It didn't do me any harm, thank God.
Oh, well, of course. But speaking of first place, do you have an all-time favorite traditional Irish melody or song, and perhaps one that you created, your favorite piece that you've composed?
Yeah, I've done quite a bit of composition, and this piece that I just told you about, my Fionn, for my grandson, is entirely composition, and although it's with orchestra and that, but at the opening part of it, and this just happened 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I put what I call a Soonstry, it's a lullaby, you know, for him, because I remember him being born as a child, and it took a while for me to finish it, but I put together this lovely little air, which I think is has a bit of magic about it, and it's very, very simple with whistle and that. But I've there's so many great pieces. I mean, there's been a lot of film music I composed music for, like the Tristan and Isolde. Now, nothing to do with that.
The Wagner opera, yeah.
this is the Irish, the original 9th century tale. You know where it came from, and Richard Burton, in fact, was Tristan. No, he wasn't Tristan, he was the King of Cornwall, that's right. And but I did a lot of music in that, and there's some nice melodies there that are soulful, and the film, incidentally, never got off the ground, but the music lives on, and even my good friend James Galway has recorded some of it, you know. So
I just love the way you pronounce the word film. Can you say film? I love that.
I remember, I didn't come on to that until after Barry Lyndon, and the Evening Standard in London did a piece on my visit to Stanley, you know, and I said, this is a great film, and then they put in commas, you know, F-I-L-U-M. And I didn't come on to it at all, you know. So it's still film with me, I'm afraid.
We're having a delightful chat with Paddy Maloney of The Chieftains. I have to ask you, we've talked about all these famous people that you've collaborated with, and then there's people that you at least sort of met or watched out of the corner of your eye. You guys were recording for half a day in Abbey Road Studios many, many, many years ago. And who should walk in but...
Well, I'll tell you the story. I was running a company, Saddle Records, and this is 1979, I think it was. Chieftains 2 was coming up, my second album.
You mean 69, not 79.
But, I couldn't get a clean acetate, you know, it was the Bakelite, you know, the 78.
Wow.
And I couldn't get a clean cut for pressing in Ireland, so I got on to a good friend of mine in EMI in Dublin called Harry Christmas.
Harry Christmas, okay. I know Moish Hanukkah, you know, if they ever met. Yes.
And Harry, he phoned up Abbey Road for me, and they said, well, the Beatles are doing Abbey Road at the moment, at that time. And it's only 69, what am I, not 79, yeah. 69. And they very kindly, I didn't know they knew about our music, you know, they very kindly gave us a half day to cut the acetate. So when I was there doing it, you know, Paul sort of rambled, oh, hello, how are you doing? Yeah. Oh, I loved your album, this and that and the other. And then John Lennon sort of strolled through, oh, how are you? So they wanted to come and see who was all making this terrible noise.
Oh, my God. But you didn't hang with them, you didn't watch them rehearse. They just sort of said hello, and then they went off to do their own thing?
That was it.
Yeah.
But I did record with Paul, incidentally.
Ooh.
Twice. You know, on Mike McGeer, his brother, he did an album with Mike McGeer.
Yeah.
I recorded on that way back in the early 70s, I think it was. And then, on the terrible day, poor John Lennon was shot in December, was 81.
Yeah.
That day, I was actually in the studio recording with Ebony, the B-side of Ebony and Ivory with Paul. Stevie was actually there, and they were pretty upset. But they wanted me to carry on, you know, I'd come over from Dublin. Linda, I was taking photographs, I was always wanting to get one. And just 6 weeks ago, I got this beautiful presentation from, because I did a piece in a book that he brought out on the Beatles, it's called, there's only 1,000, Tug of War. From Paul, you know, and there was the photograph with me standing with my pipes and himself and George Martin, you know, the producer.
Right.
And so I got the photograph and I got permission to use it too, which is great, you know.
Can I ask you, you have known so many famous people, do you get still or do you ever get starstruck Or is it just, oh, there's a fellow musician, they happen to be famous, I don't care, let's just make music?
Well, I sit down with anybody. I mean, I love it, like I've worked a lot with Roy Cooder, who comes to mind now at the moment, you know, and he's a great hero of many, many people, and great musician. And, you know, that brought me to Cuba as well. That was before, a year before he did that masterpiece, the Bonavista. But I did have some of those musicians play on my album the year before he did Bonavista. So, and he was down there with me as well. So it was, there's great people, and there's great stories, and it doesn't bother me anymore whatsoever. You know, the great Oscar Peterson, for instance, the great piano player, who's gone now, of course, but I remember doing BBC with him, and it was great. He was doing a television show. That would have been, goodness, when would it have been, like early 70s, I think it was. And just to join in with him was just terrific, you know, and great. And that John Williams, for instance, when he did Far and Away, a beautiful score,
right.
He got the Chieftains to play, and we were rehearsing it, and it's just grand if you were reading the dots, you know, which we don't normally do. We don't do it on stage,
right.
Unless we have to with something. But I sort of very nicely said, John, do you mind if I just take off in my own way? And he put his arms around me. He said, that's great, I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
So he said to the orchestra, you watch me and I watch him. And I remember that day very well. Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman came down to the recording. And great days and great memories, you know.
And actually, speaking of movies, you worked with someone who talks even faster than I do, Martin Scorsese, on Gangs of New York. Do you have any Scorsese memories or stories?
I don't, you know, I except for that, that was the only occasion, you know?
Right.
That I remember was that Gangs of New York. I know he's done something with my good friend Mr. Jagger as well. It was a film on it, actually, just last week here, they showed us Martin Scorsese and Mick Jagger together, and I didn't have that much moment. I tell you, Robert Wise, Bob Wise, who...
The West Side Story guy, yeah?
Yeah, he did the Sound of Music.
Oh, Sound of Music, right, yes, yes.
And he was a great fan of the band and had us to dinner several times. And I know I bought him a bottle of Potsheen. There's a whole story how he got it into the country. Potsheen is moonshine and it's illegal, you know. And going through security, you know, the cap was open. The woman said, oh, look, I have to smell this. And she, oh my God, I had holy water written on the bottle. And she said, go on, take it away, take it away. But I did present that to Bob, you know. And good old time, Larry Hagman, and after we won the Oscar, you know, there was up in Burgess Meredith's house, we had a party. And, you know, there was great moments and these people who absolutely loved what we did, you know. And, you know, I remember staying was up down on Malibu Beach, it was. Oh, it's going out of my head. Sorry, I'm talking too much, sorry.
No.
Too much name dropping. I should mention, incidentally, in the concert, we're going to show a video of my tin whistle. Burgess Meredith, I was trying to say.
Ah.
We used to stay with him, the family. My tin whistle did go up onto the International Space Station.
Wow!
Yeah, it went around for 6 months and with one of Matt Malloy's flutes. And I got the whistle back from Katie Coleman. Katie is an astronaut, and she plays the flute. And my son, incidentally, the rocket scientist, he worked for NASA there for 7 years. So we do get around.
I
should mention my daughter. My God, she'd be furious. She's an actress in New York for the last 25 years.
Wait, what's her name?
Aideen.
Oh, my God, I've seen her at Irish Repertory Theater.
She has her own production company called Fallen Angel. And so there's a new play coming up in April, which she's got me to submit some of my music, various suggestions of tunes and stuff. So that could be happening in April. And at the moment, she's going to be appearing at the Mint Theatre in another play, a different play. But she's an active very active young woman.
Well, that's so great that you have such talented people, that it runs in the genes and the bloodlines of the Maloney family. And we just have a minute or two left to talk with this delightful, wonderful man, whom, by the way, you can all see live with the legendary band, The Chieftains, at Town Hall on March 12th, Saturday night. And please, please do go see this band that has been around for more than 50 years now. But since we're getting towards St. Patrick's Day, which is a day I do not personally celebrate because I'm Jewish, but you must, do you have any great memories of St. Paddy's Day in Ireland?
In Ireland, it was a holy day, and you got off school. That was a great joy.
Yeah.
You have to go to school. So it was like Sunday, and the pubs, incidentally, had Sunday hours. They opened at 12 and closed at 2, opened at 7 and closed at 9, which was ridiculous. But I do remember going on the parade down Dublin, one of the first parades, which only lasted like your 5-hour parade. This was only for about half an hour. And I was up on an open lorry or truck, as you would call it, with 16 young pipers. And I was in short trousers and I was frozen. It was really cold.
Oh, right, yeah.
Playing the pipes, you know. But I do have that great memory of that. And of my father, you know, singing the Dear Little Shamrock, and great memories of that. And music would happen that night too. Somebody would play a melodeon and the dancing would start. And it was a wind-up gramophone that I had. I'd play the old 78s on, and that was all the...
During a parade? You have a gramophone during a parade, or is this later on? This is...
No, on that night.
On that later on, okay.
A little bit of music, you know? And somebody would play the melodeon, squeeze box, or whatever you like to call it, accordion, and dancing. There'd be a lot of dancing would happen. This would be in the house that night, you know? But often I would play the wind-up gramophone, you know, and put in the needle and play these old 78s.
Wow.
They were just fantastic times. But Patrick's Day was always great. But I've spent most Patrick's Days now for the last 40 years, I think, in the United States. You know, we've done Carnegie Hall many, many times and still do. The whole atmosphere, and particularly just taking off afterwards. I don't do that so much this time. We stay in the one place now to celebrate. But we used to go from pub to pub all over New York, and that was just terrific times, you know.
And I guess the last question for the delightful Paddy Maloney would be, of all the letters and the photographs and the probably the gold records, what is your most precious keepsake, possession of your years as a musician?
Well, I probably am just looking at them here in the music room. Perhaps the 6 Grammys are dear to me. You know, having won 6 Grammys, a great breakthrough, in fact, for Irish music. You know, that traditional Irish band, 6 of us, often described as 6 bank clerks coming on the stage with ties and suits. And then to get to that, to get to achieve that, and an Oscar as well later. And perhaps now the Trinity College in Dublin, which is one of the most important colleges in the world, they honoured me with an honorary music doctorate. You know? And I got one from the American College as well, so I did 3 of them all together. Triple doc.
Pretty good. Well, then I'll have to call you Dr. Paddy Maloney.
No, please don't. I just know.
Well, it has been a healing balm to the soul to talk to you, as it has been to hear your music for these past 50 or so years. Everybody, please see the Chieftains at Town Hall Saturday night, March 12th. I want to thank you ever, ever so much for spreading the wonderful Blarney with us here in the neighborhood, and much continued good health and success and extraordinary music to you, Paddy Maloney.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Saul.
Rabbi Osal.
Osal. all. There, I made it, that mistake again.
Shalom to you.
Hope to see you sometime soon. I'd love to meet up with you and have a bit of talk, a bit of chat, and maybe some music, you never know.
And some Manischewitz to go with a Guinness. That would work. Shalom to you, Baggy Maloney.
Shalom, shalom, shalom.